Reporting on politics and public policy is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota's Democratic Party has new leadership. The Trump administration announces a presidential task force on protecting Native American children in the Indian Health Service system, and a look at flooding from both sides of the state. The Dakota Political Junkies join us for our weekly roundtable. We welcome Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter Seth Tupper, and he joins us from our Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio inside SDPP's Black Hills studio in Rapid. Hi, Seth.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us on the phone, Sioux Falls Argus Leader, investigative reporter, and columnist Jonathan Ellis. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks, Lori.
Jonathan, let's start with you, because when we talk about the impact of flooding in a city like Sioux Falls, one of the big news stories is people ending up in the river, and that just happened yesterday. Tell us a little bit about what the flooding looks like in an urban area like Sioux Falls.
Well, fortunately, I mean, we've had quite an extensive flood control project, built in Sioux Falls, and that's by and large has been holding. You mentioned the person in the river, and there's been an update on that. It would seem to be that was an intentional deal there. So without going into too much detail. The river is the it's an amazing spectacle when you go to the falls, or I drove up to Aberdeen this weekend and just seeing it in places along the highway there. I mean, just how it's flooding, and the flooding is quite severe in the farm areas. But then when it gets here, well, by and large, I mean the river has been pretty well controlled with the levee system that we have. Certainly, parklands that ring the river, which were put there back in the 70s and 60s. The city went around and bought up a lot of lands that were next to the river in order to like create a park system that when it floods, I mean, those you'd rather have your park flood than homes. So by and large, it's been put up to a test, and it's survived.
Seth, news from Rapid City. Not quite as severe there, as I understand it.
We're high and dry out here. Sorry.
Rapid City is annoying with their weather sometimes. They're like, it's nice here. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, not too bad. Obviously, some serious issues down on the Pine Ridge Reservation with flooding, but and then there are some other water issues. I was in northwest South Dakota where they still have quite a bit of snow really up there and some water issues. But Rapid City, we're very lucky.
And we are going to talk about some of those issues in Pine Ridge in our next segment. But let's move on here with Seth and Jonathan and talk a little bit about this presidential task force, because this is something that has a connection to South Dakota, which is not the connection you want. But from the victimization of so many children in the past. Seth, give us an update on the significance of this presidential task force.
Well, it's something that, to be honest with you, I think Jonathan would agree that it's hard not to be skeptical about something like this. The Indian Health Service has been one of the most troubled federal agencies now for, I guess, decades, and just problem after problem. We know well here on the Great Plains of all the problems that IHS has had with its hospitals here, not meeting standards of care for the Medicare and Medicaid regulations, and there's been some terrible horror stories that have emerged from that. And then of course we have the this instance of a doctor preying on molesting children, an IHS doctor. And being transferred around to different clinics, including some in South Dakota, and that's what's really sparked this move now to figure out how did that happen and what reforms can be made. But over the years there have been so many audits and study groups and task forces and what have you, committed to trying to figure out what's wrong with IHS and how do we turn it around, and we just still seem to be getting the same results over and over, and so. Yeah, it's tough not to be skeptical about it. I mean, for the sake of the people involved, I hope that they figure something out with this task force. But it's another in a long line of efforts to figure things out.
And for listeners who want to learn more, Predator on the Reservation, which was a joint Frontline and Wall Street Journal documentary, we spoke with the filmmakers on this program. It was aired on PBS and South Dakota Public Television in February, which sort of laid out Dr. Stanley Weber's journey through Montana and in South Dakota, how he was, you know, reports were made and reports were ignored. Jonathan, what's your take on the task force?
Well, I mean, I guess it's good to see that the government is sort of responding to this this incident, and hopefully it's an isolated incident. But I mean, as Seth, you know, says, I mean, the IHS has been sort of a limitless well of incompetence over the years, and I mean, if you want to write investigative news stories about government incompetence, I mean, IHS is low hanging fruit. Dana Ferguson, who used to be on this show before she left, had an amazing piece that we ran late last year on IHS incompetence, just general IHS incompetence, and how the people who that agency is supposed to be, you know, serving is not serving them at all. So it's unfortunate. I mean, this commission is looking at obviously the issues with the doctor, but we had a House committee respond to both Dana's investigation and this the investigation into this doctor. They're going to be looking at IHS too, but you know, this has been going on for many, many, many years, and they have yet to really solve the problem there.
Talk a little bit more then, Seth, about the role of journalism in this sort of thing as we look at the Frontline exceptional documentary and the work done by people like Dana Ferguson and other reporters. There's a strong argument for the need for that kind of journalism.
There certainly is, and there's also a strong argument for some action finally on the part of the government. I mean, this has been a cycle that has been repeated over and over and over for decades. Journalists will do an expose or an investigative piece on some outrageous thing happening with IHS, and there's all kinds of public outrage, and you know, perhaps there's a system-wide audit of the IHS, or there's a task force convened or whatever. And some years go by, and then the cycle repeats. There's more reporting about more outrageous things happening in IHS, and it just seems to keep happening over and over and over again. And you just feel like you're trapped in this never-ending cycle. And I guess, you know, I don't know. I mean, you just wonder if there's a need for some more fundamental change than what's ever been proposed or studied, and because you really wonder, you know, in a few years from now, what's the next story going to be that as Jonathan mentioned, about the latest incompetence of what's going on in the IHS.
Right, what's happening right now, today, as we speak, yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly.
All right, let's jump to the Democratic Party, the South Dakota State Democratic Party, hiring new leadership. Jonathan, you want to kick that off? Who do we have leading the charge? Some familiar names.
Well, we do have some. I mean, there was it was a contested election for the Democratic leadership. We now have Paula Hawks, who is going to be chairing the party, and you know, that's a change that's been, I think, in the coming for some time. I mean, there have been a lot of Democrats who've been dissatisfied with the former chair Ann Thornburg, and under. I think she's been blamed for the party's performance in recent elections, maybe unfairly, frankly. But she has been blamed by some members of the party for really the dismal showing they've had, not only in statewide races, but even in legislative races where they should have probably been more competitive. So Paula Hawks, who was a lawmaker herself and ran against Kristi Noem, I believe that was in 2016, for Congress, is now going to be leading the party, and we'll see what happens. There's a lot of improvement needed for the South Dakota Democrats in order to be, you know, a player in our state's political system. I mean, in some counties, they're a third party. So Paula Hawks and then Randy Seiler, the former U.S. attorney who ran for attorney general, will be the vice chair. I mean, he arguably had one of the more successful statewide races that Democrats have had recently. So it'll be interesting to see where they try to take the party here, what their goals are going to be. I mean, yeah. I think Paula had said that, you know, they want to turn South Dakota blue by the next 2020 election, you know, for the presidential election, I think that's a little unrealistic, okay? I mean, I think maybe we ought to be maybe looking at some legislative races and starting to build from the ground up. So we'll see what they have planned here.
And Seth, last election, they were talking about, you know, getting somebody on the ballot in every, getting somebody on every ballot. What's a realistic goal? And Seth, talk a little bit about the role of Randy Seiler.
Yeah, I don't know what role he's going to have. As I read, he was kind of surprised by the nomination. So I don't know what role he's going to have. I do think that with Paula Hawks, you'll see a more. I think she views herself as a more aggressive, more progressive, and more of an activist leader of the party than perhaps the party has had in recent years. As we know from the recent election, the party kind of saddled itself to Billy Sutton, who was a very moderate. Some would have classified him as more of a moderate Republican than a Democrat, and I think you're going to see that change. I think Paula Hawks, from what we know about her run in 2016, when she described herself, and sometimes when I interviewed her, as a progressive, I think she's probably going to try to steer the party more in that direction, and maybe she and maybe some of the party faithful believe that's what's needed in an atmosphere in a 2020 election when perhaps Democrats can be motivated and animated by their opposition to President Trump in a presidential race. So, I think it'll just be a change of direction. But, you know, as Jonathan said, I mean, really in South Dakota, the fundamental things that the party needs to do is start from the ground up and try to get legislators elected. I think that is realistic to try to have legislators running in every race. I mean, the county organization isn't great in some counties for the Democratic Party, but if you don't start there, people won't filter up, and you really got to start from the bottom and have candidates grow into legislators and then into higher office.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guests from Rapid City are Seth Tupper with the Rapid City Journal, and on the phone from Sioux Falls, Jonathan Ellis with the Argus Leader. And Seth, let's talk about an election happening in Rapid City, Mayor Allender, and what's kicking off in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, but there will be a mayoral election. We don't know a whole lot about it yet. We just reported, I think it was in today's paper, that there will be a challenger. And unfortunately, I don't know a lot about that challenger yet. But you know, Mayor Allender was unopposed last time, so he has opposition now. But he's been he'll certainly try to run on his record of kind of ushering through the voter approval of a new arena in Rapid City, which we expect they'll probably start building this spring and summer. Finally, after many, many years of debate about whether to do that, he's helped push through an effort to do more services for the homeless and near homeless in Rapid City, including what will end up being the construction of a large campus to serve the city's homeless population and kind of centralized services to that population that Mayor Allender has really supported. I mean, that's what he'll run on, and you know, we really haven't heard much of anything else about what the issues will be in the race yet, but we will have that election upcoming, and we'll see what the challenger tries to do to convince voters to go against the incumbent.
And Jonathan, let's wrap up with a little bit from the state legislative session, and you wrote about Governor Kristi Noem and her response to hemp legislation, CBD industry. Give us an update there on what you know. What's sort of the issue now going forward?
Well, the Attorney General apparently has responded to the latest on. I guess the hemp and the CBD oil, saying that all CBD oils are apparently illegal in South Dakota, which would be an amazing thing. If he says it is, I mean, you can go to almost any store and buy this stuff. I think. I mean, I don't use this stuff, or I don't ever. I've never used it, but I know people, plenty of people who do, and it's. I mean, you can buy it like any health food store or any. I think nutrition stores, whatever. I mean, you buy these various creams or whatever they're used for, and now they're illegal. So I'm sorry, I just have to laugh about this, Lori, because I mean, what an absurdity this is. But whatever. So anyway, apparently CBD oil, any kind of CBD oils, except for one that has been FDA approved Epidiolex, if I'm pronouncing that right. I can't remember. That's the only one that can be used because it's FDA approved, and apparently there's something in law, and I was looking at the law, and it's very poorly written, and it's been on the books for many
years. In South Dakota law or in federal law?
South Dakota law.
Okay,
sorry,
yeah, thank
South
you.
Dakota law, which any kind of marijuana product that's not approved by FDA is basically illegal. So so hey, if you got your CBD cream, pain cream out there, you better hide it because it's illegal.
Who do you think? I mean, you say it's absurd, but who's the there are business owners who have these things on their shelves, and it wasn't. Now I'm trying to remember what was. It was the potpourri stuff that businesses were shut down and people went to jail for putting products on their shelf that were technically illegal, but had kind of become accepted, but that the government said was dangerous. So there's a precedent for this, for some people actually getting in trouble, isn't there, Jonathan? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, I mean those were substances that were actually, somewhat like an intoxicating substance, and people were kind of, misusing it. You're right, and of course the legislature passed law. My understanding, again, I've never used this, but the CBD oils, there's nothing intoxicating them or anything about that. But my point is,
it was a law, and people thought nobody's going to come after these business owners who just have this innocent thing on the shelf because we're selling it as potpourri, and then suddenly someone came knocking at the door. So I guess that's my point, is not so much about the substance itself, but how the law, how the law can be applied.
Yeah, and my understanding is these CBD products are far more widespreadly available in the market than certainly the other stuff that people were smoking or whatever. But yeah, I mean, you're right. they can come knocking on your door, I suppose, according to the Attorney General.
All right, Seth, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, yeah, we did have some people that were selling CBD oil who were cited for breaking the law here in Rapid City late last year. I believe that was before the new farm bill passed, and of course, the new farm bill legalized hemp and I guess hemp derived CBD at the federal level. But anything you're going to sell and claim that has curative powers or whatever, that's something that you need to get cleared by the FDA, and that's a position the FDA has taken. That the only thing we've cleared so far is Epidiolex, and so that's where it sits. And it is kind of absurd. I see shops in Rapid City that are selling CBD oil still, and so it's a really tough question for lawmakers, which is you've got the Attorney General saying all this stuff is or for law enforcement, I should say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you enforce this stuff, which, again, is not intoxicating, and do you arrest people who are selling it because the Attorney General has now declared in clear terms that this is illegal, or do you let it slide?
And this is part of this bigger conversation, and Jonathan, you wrote about it earlier in the month about Governor Noem, coming out and talking about this industry and in the veto of industrial hemp and sort of saying, this industry is trying to sort of sneak in and get a foothold. So this is obviously political as well as looking at the current statute.
I think that, the governor is...
I love it when I ask you a question and you make that sound.
Yeah, you don't want to get me in trouble now, Lori, do you? No. My latest on this is that this is not, if the governor thinks that this is something that, she's going to stand in the way of the next three legislative sessions that she's governor or whatever, it's not going to happen. I mean, I already know some Republican lawmakers who are already rethinking people actually have to study the issue now. I mean, there have been hemp bills introduced in the South Dakota legislature for the last two decades, and they've never really gone anywhere. They've been, I think, stuck in committee, and so now actually people have to look around and survey what's going on. And honestly, I think if we had a longer legislative session like other states do, I think there would have been some Republican lawmakers who voted against hemp who probably would have voted in favor if they had more time to kind of look at the issue.
Right.
So I think that my guess is that next year this thing passes.
Well, it didn't pass, and she vetoed it.
Well, my guess is there'll be enough support to override any kind of veto if she
Got
thinks
it.
She's going. And frankly, if she, I mean, if I'm advising her, I'm telling her, look, you better get out in front of this next year and come up with a plan, because something is going to pass.
Right. And it's time to learn about the issue. I think that's the takeaway, is that, you know, sure. For a lot of people, it's been a question mark. It's on the shelves. It's, you know, what is it? It's time to learn exactly what it is that we're talking about. Jonathan Ellison from the Argus Leader, Jonathan Ellis from the Argus Leader, and Seth Tupper from Rapid City Journal. ArgusLeader.com, RapidCityJournal.com. Pretty easy. Seth, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Jonathan, thanks for joining us as well.
It's been a laugh. Thank you.